Welcome to Tokyo Game Life, a Tokyo-based video game podcast focusing on Nintendo and gaming culture in Japan's capital. Your host Mono here to bring you a slice of gaming life from Tokyo. I'm not alone, though, as today's guest is another fellow Tokyo resident. Doc Fugu joins me to chat about Street Fighter VI, Capcom's newest smash hit fighting game. We dig into what makes this game so special, and also touch on the fighting game community right here in Tokyo, and recommend the best places to play some Street Fighter against real folks. In the feature section, I'm talking about the Pikachu Afternoon Tea event right here in Tokyo. The menu, the atmosphere, whether or not it's okay to put a battery in a drink, I'll get to everything. And in the news, I'll tell you what new game announcements you should actually care about. Let's jump right into the games with Doc Fugu and Street Fighter VI. Tokyo Game Life, only on the Tokyo Beat Podcast Network. The latest entry in Capcom's iconic fighting game series is finally here. Street Fighter VI hit shelves a few days ago, and while it's currently on my ever-growing backlog, I brought in an expert to tell us all about Capcom's newest fighter and delve a bit into the fighting game scene right here in Tokyo. So guest, please introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi, I'm Doc Fugu on Twitter, an older guy. So I've been in Japan for about 17, 18 years. I've been playing Street Fighter since 1991. So I've been at this for a while. Now you're overselling it by saying that I'm an expert. I'm more of a casual fan and enjoyer.
Anyone smarter than me, I just call him an expert. So thanks for joining me. Before we jump right into the game, I want to hear a bit more about your Street Fighter backstory. Like you mentioned before, you've been playing for quite a while. So how did you get into the franchise and fighting games in general?
Well, so I think this is like a lot of people back in the 90s. When Street Fighter came out, it was everywhere. So for me, I first encountered it in the back of a pizza shop in New Jersey, Al John's Pizza in West Windsor. And I really fell in love pretty quick. It was great. And then it was at high school for me, so I'd go down to the local arcade at the mall and try to play people and get beat on and so forth. And then over the years, I've always enjoyed Street Fighter. So when I went to college, I got a Super Nintendo and built a stick to play with and got X-Band so we could play across the internet. And as time and technology went on, I continued to sort of keep pace and play. And in fact, one of the reasons I'm in Japan is because Street Fighter is developed by Capcom out in Osaka. And I really wanted to be in that area. So that's where video games are made and great players are born. And so that's one of the reasons that I made my way out to Japan.
So with that, let's look at the newest game. I think a lot of people had high hopes and high expectations for Street Fighter VI, since it looks like they took a lot of the feedback from Street Fighter V to heart, and they've made some ambitious new modes. Would it be safe to say that Street Fighter VI has met your expectations?
Well, for me, for sure. I mean, everyone complains about the Street Fighter V launch because it basically launched with a really bare-bones system. You could just play ranked matches sort of one-on-one against other people. Very simple arcade mode. You get a few static pictures when you play the CPU, and that was it. It had traditionally been kind of what fighting games were for a good, you know, if you look past Alpha 3 and Soul Calibur and a bunch of these other ones that really did innovate. But Street Fighter V, yeah, people really didn't feel like that was a great launch. And Street Fighter VI really came out of the gate strong. It's really good for casuals, really good for pros. It's got this world tour mode that I haven't spent more than 4 or 5 hours in, but it's like an open world action RPG, which is lots of fun. And I'm going to definitely spend time on that. And it's got really great tutorials. So if you don't know much about the game, it really eases you into it. It has these accessibility settings for people that maybe are of low sight or other sorts of things, but as well as a new modern control type that makes it much easier on the execution side. So it really came out of the gate doing quite well and got very good reviews. 40 in Famitsu? So it's definitely the first Street Fighter title to do that.
Yes. It's just as good as the JoJo's fighting game, apparently.
Yeah, JoJo's back on the PlayStation 2 or something. I forget which one that was.
What's the most surprising thing about Street Fighter VI so far?
Well, certainly for me, the most surprising thing was how good that World Tour mode is and how much effort went into it. But it just looks really big and quite huge. It's more than you would expect for a fighting game. So looking at that, it looks a lot like one of the Ryuga Gotokos or Yakuza series games, right? Like of that caliber running around and doing stuff, which is just really amazing for a fighting game because the core concept of fighting games are usually these one-on-one battles to see of the two players who's able to manage their character better. And of course, the battle system in Street Fighter VI is really good as well. So Everyone has really been complimentary of the system.
What do you think is the biggest difference in comparison to Street Fighter V when it comes to the game mechanics? What gives this game the edge over V, for example?
Well, the game mechanics for VI, it allows a lot more flexibility. I think V I like quite a bit. It's a very good game, I think. But it's one where you really have to know frame data. So if you're familiar with James Chen, he's a fighting game commentary guy who says you got people who play by heart, people who play by mind, and people who play by body, right? So like good executions, the body is good execution skills. Mind are the people that know the game inside and out. They know if you attack with this attack, you're plus two frames, and that means you can do X, Y, or Z, and the opponent can't. And these people play with harder, like me from the arcades, where we didn't have training modes. You just go and play and do what kind of feels right. Street Fighter VI, I think, really supports that, and it does that by having a very flexible system where at almost any time you can spend some of this drive gauge to make yourself plus or to give yourself advantageous situations, or you have these reversals you can do and all sorts of interesting things that really keep the system open. They're like all fighting games, they're still going to be like optimal combos. So like the best of the best are always going to do the same thing. But there's also a lot of expression available with these different routes of how to use the drive gauge. And it's got a very interesting interplay between how do you manage the resources that you have? Because that drive gauge is one thing you have to keep an eye on. There's the super bar, and if you block, it reduces your drive gauge and all sorts of stuff like that. It's very flexible, I'd say.
And you mentioned this earlier, but I think we can all agree that the biggest new addition is the World Tour mode, which, yeah, like you said earlier, is a very Yakuza-inspired action-adventure game. So you said you've played about a few hours with it so far. So do you think it's a, I'm not sure if faithful is the right word, but is this the direction that they should have gone for the Street Fighter single-player mode?
Well, I think it's a great direction to go. I mean, one of the reasons I like it a lot is that Capcom, the characters in Street Fighter have always been very evocative and in some ways a bit ridiculous, right?
Yes.
Kind of taking extremes and throwing some unreality in there, but they have a lot of character with them. And in this World Tour mode, you really get a way to explore more of that and see the history and look at all the fun things that are going on in the background of the stages. Like in Chun-Li's stage in Street Fighter II, you're at a market, there's some guy deep boning it, you're plucking a chicken and people on bikes. And you really get a way to sort of see how does that world come to life, where it has a bit of this ridiculousness in it with the bad guys and the gangs on the street with cardboard boxes on their heads or whatever. And kind of nods to Final Fight. Like there's some characters from other Capcom properties in Street Fighter universe. And just lots of fun. It's amazing how much dialogue is in there. And I'm glad it's not all voiced, right? I think there's lots of NPCs that just have text. And I think that's the way you need to do it when you have so much text to do.
I think the World Tour mode has piqued the interest of a lot of casual fighting game players who want to meet your single player experience and have really no plan to play online against others. Do you think somebody would be satisfied with Street Fighter VI solely because of the World Tour mode?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I enjoy games that I don't play online just to run through the arcade mode sometimes. So There are people like that as well. But World Tour mode really gives you a lot more interesting stuff to do. And I think it introduces you to the mechanics in a way that you get used to that. And it's very easy, I think, then to have some friends over and just noodle around. And they have these other things too, like kind of like party battle games like Smash Brothers, where there's items and bulls running around in this extreme battle mode. So I think there's lots of things you can do. And if you enjoy the World Tour mode, maybe you decide to hop onto ranked mode or go out to some place where a bunch of people play in person. And it's a gentle introduction to it, but you're definitely getting your money's worth for just that World Tour mode, I think.
There are 18 fighters, a mix of both old and new. Do you think this is a pretty solid base roster?
It's good to me. I mean, when I started with Street Fighter II, there were 8, and you could only you could choose the same character head-to-head. So I think it's a good number. I think most fighting games, the big ones anyway, maybe end their roster with around 30, 34, 35, something like that, characters. And there's a downside to having so many characters as well, which is if you're playing it, you have to learn how to play against that many characters, right? So especially at the start, having a smaller number can help people sort of get used to the ones that are in there. But I think, yeah, the numbers of people that they have in there now is it's pretty large. And I think there are characters that fit almost everybody's type of style, right? Lots of different archetypes of the big body grappler bruisers and really small, fast rushdown characters, things like that. So you should be able to find someone that you think is interesting and amusing.
Yeah, I think one of the curses of the Street Fighter franchise is that they had to decide, oh, how many Street Fighter 2 characters needs to be in the base roster to get people excited? Some people are saying like, oh, where's Dalsum? Where's my main from Street Fighter 2? But others really like the Street Fighter 3 approach where it's mostly new characters. So I think that's a pretty difficult thing to balance for every new Street Fighter game.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, in Street Fighter 3, you bring that up as, I think, a good example, because from Street Fighter 2, they went to Championship Edition, Super Street Fighter 2, Super Turbo. Mm. And then the next was Street Fighter Alpha. And Street Fighter Alpha was essentially all the same characters, just younger, except for Guile. They put in Charlie or Nash, depending.
Yes.
Which region you're in. And then Street Fighter 3 was the first time where they really tried to get a completely new cast. And Alex was supposed to be the main protagonist in that game. And it definitely didn't come off that way. Like they had to add Ryu in there. Chun-Li came back. You know, all those, a lot of the iconic characters did in fact come back. And that's a problem. It's a curse that Capcom has. I mean, those characters are so well known and so popular that they really do have to, I think, keep them in there in order to get some popularity up there. But so it might be tough for them. But you know, if you've got Ryu and Cammy in Fortnite, you're doing something right.
Yes. So would you say that Luke is the new Alex?
Well, I think Luke and Jamie are supposed to be the new Ryu and Ken analogs. And yeah, I mean, people go back and forth about whether they like Luke or not. But I've come around. I didn't like him so much in Street Fighter V because he seemed to have too many tools. But he seems okay in 6. And more than that, the voice actor for Luke, I think it's Alex Lay. I'd have to check. He's on Twitter. He does some really amusing stuff and really got me to come around to, by association, liking Luke.
There are also DLC fighters announced. We've got Rashid, AKI, who is a new character, Ed, and Akuma. Is there anyone you hope they add to the game in the future?
Well, so I'm a big fan of Thunderhawk, a big Native American from Super Street Fighter back in the day. And so I have always wanted to see him come back. This time we get Lily, who's from the same tribe. It's not clear to me if she's his daughter or not. I haven't progressed far enough in the story mode to figure that out yet. But she has all of his moves and is actually, I think, a more interesting take on Thunderhawk. So I'm really happy to see her back. Otherwise, there's other people from Third Strike that I liked a lot. Like Necro was always interesting. I thought he was an interesting, weird dude. But I'm pretty happy with just about anyone that comes out. I also play Ryu a lot. So, yeah, whoever comes out, I'm pretty happy to see.
A popular trend in fighting games recently has been guest fighters. But Street Fighter has yet to cross that line, unless you count something like rival schools. Would you like to see more guest fighters appear in Street Fighter? And if so, do you have anyone in mind?
Right. Well, so from Capcom's IPs, I think there's a lot of stuff there. So Rival Schools is one that a lot of people like. I think Akira from Rival Schools showed up in Street Fighter V. I'd love to see Darkstalkers make a comeback, but they're definitely not going to do it in the Street Fighter series. So that's not something I'm too sure about. Of course, there was Street Fighter Cross Tekken. So the Capcom developed series that had both Tekken and Street Fighter characters in it. I think that was pretty interesting.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, guest characters from other fighters. I really like to see Capcom do interesting things with the Versus series and bring in different mechanics from that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, otherwise it's hard for me to say. I wonder, they did announce just recently that they're doing some Street Fighter crossovers to Exo Primal, so a new Capcom game. So that's going the other way. But yeah, I'm not sure. I think Street Fighter VI gives them a good position to try to build a sort of Capcom world and bring in a lot of other people. But from other companies, I wonder how that would go.
I want to delve a bit into the fighting game scene in Tokyo. How did you get involved with the Tokyo FGC? And how would you say the fighting game scene is different from the one in the West?
Well, so I can talk a bit about how I got into the scene here in Japan. And it wasn't anything super crazy, but I did an internship in Japan quite a while ago, maybe in 99, working at NTT. And after work every day, I'd go to the arcade and just play. And so that's, I think, how traditionally the Japanese arcade, you know, how the community was. You'd have an arcade, you'd go there, and there were lots of arcades and lots of people, and you'd build a little community up that way. Now, when I finally got back here for good, I think in 2008 I came, I wasn't really tapped into the fighting game community at all. It wasn't something that I knew about. So in the U.S., I kind of missed the Western fighting game scene. So when I went to college, I played at our local arcade at the university, made some good friends there. We played a lot, and we'd sort of travel around Dallas sometimes. But I didn't. There wasn't really a bigger scene to get into. Oh, I was on Alt Game Street Fighter 2 on Usenet, but it's pretty small. And then eventually after college, I went to university, did my PhD. And I don't know if you have a PhD. It takes a lot of time. So I just wasn't really doing much with fighting games then. I used to go down to the Chinatown Arcade, Chinatown Fair, and play there, but just lose quite a bit. But I wasn't really tied into any of the scene at all until when I came to Japan. I was working for a few years, and one of our coworkers said, oh, I like Street Fighter, and I watch these tournaments online. And I said, there's tournaments online? And that's how I learned about Evo and all of these other big tournaments that happen. And Twitter, I got on Twitter because of that, just to follow a few people. And so I started to see what the US FGC was like, when I just never really had been part of it, because it's a little bit hard to find if you don't know about it. In Japan, once I'd gotten on Twitter, I decided, well, what I would have liked to have had when I first got here in Japan was some easy and accessible way in English to find out about what's going on for fighting games. Hmm. And so I started to just translate stuff that I thought would be interesting. I started to keep a list of local offline events. So back when I first got here, of course, the big thing was to go to an arcade. The trick was, and I went to lots of arcades and played lots of games, but the trick was there are a couple of arcades that have lots of people that everyone goes to. And if you didn't know that it was the Shinjuku Nishiguchi Taito Station at the time, then you just never would have come across it, I guess. So, yeah, I started to put together lists of offline events, particularly with Street Fighter V. When that came out, there was no arcade version of it. One did come out a year or two later. And so instead of arcades, people started to hold offline gatherings. And a lot of these people were either arcade related or event organizers for like SBO or Togeki or any of the other large offline tournaments that they would hold. So, and I didn't know about these either until I heard on a podcast that hasn't been around for a long time, the Jump Off or the Jump In by Logan Sama and Kim1234. They mentioned offhand that, yeah, there's a local at Akihabara on Wednesday nights. Hmm. So I went there and then been going to that ever since. And it just started up again last week, actually, after like a 3-year or 2-year hiatus.
So do you have any recommended hotspots for fighting game players who want to get involved with the scene in Tokyo?
Yeah, it does depend on what game you want. So different games have different venues or different things that are going on. So if Street Fighter VI is what you're into right now, there's lots of different events. Hmm. The ones that I like are run by Kagechi. He's a well-known tournament organizer out here. He's set up an event in Akihabara every Wednesday night at the eSports Square in Akihabara. They also have versions of that in Yokohama, I think Kanazawa, and Sapporo, maybe one other place. But that's a good event to go to. Everyone's quite friendly. You do have to sort of know Japanese for the most part. I mean, I'm usually, well, often around, and there's other people that can help out as well. So that's good for Street Fighter VI. If you like Guilty Gear Strive and Tekken, there's an event run on Tuesdays at the Red Bull Gaming Sphere, which is nice because it's also free. Like everything, for the most part, has some entrance, except these Red Bull Gaming Sphere events sometimes are free. Tatakai Tuesdays is run every other Tuesday, and that's organized by a guy named Giuna. So he's someone who really knows about the fighting game scene. I really don't. I'm just kind of a casual, but him and Majin Obama kind of run that. They play Strive and a bunch of other games out there, and we'll have some Street Fighter VI at the next Tuesday when they run it next week. So that's a good one. There's also a couple of places that are just sort of fun little places to go. So there's a bar called Shot Bar Lucy out in, I think it's Ochinomizu. And they do fighting game, different events every night of the week, except for their whatever think Mondays they're the take UV there, the day off. So there's a lot of smaller games like Arc System Work Games, or French Bread is a company that makes, like, what is it, Under Night in Birth and things like that. So Shop Bar Lucy is a neat little place to go. It's a relatively small bar. You can get maybe 15 to 20 people in there, but they're friendly people out that way. Yeah, there's a few places like that, but mostly the Akihabara local and anything at Red Bull Gaming Sphere is probably worth your time.
What would you say is the most popular fighting game in the Tokyo scene? Is it Street Fighter?
Well, it's Street Fighter 6 right now, but Tekken's always got a big player base. Strive, Guilty Gear Strive has a big player base. And then there's a dedicated but smaller player bases for some of the more anime games like Under Night in Birth and things like that. But certainly right now, Street Fighter 6 is the biggest one. Dragon Ball FighterZ, I guess there's also some popularity around that. Hmm. If you consider it a fighting game, the biggest game is probably that Gundam, like a virtual Gundam thing. But and there's a lot of carryover. A lot of fighting game people like that game. But it's not clear to me if it's strictly fits the definition.
A Street Fighter VI arcade version has been announced for Japan, Street Fighter VI Type Arcade, which is ironically being handled by Taito. Do hardcore fighting game players have any interest in these post-console arcade releases, or are they just kind of ignored after a specific platform has been standardized for the scene?
Yeah, it's really, the interest in the arcade has really died down with Street Fighter V, really, because other sorts of venues became more important. So for offline events, people organize things where it's really dedicated to it. And then with the rise of good netcode, so Guilty Gear Strive and Street Fighter VI both have really good netcode using rollback netcode. So you can play at home. And a lot of the professionals and people who are really interested in it, they get the high refresh rate monitors. And so the arcades, I think there is an arcade, the standard that Taito runs on these, their PC-based systems, but they're not running at high refresh rates. And I wonder if they're going to get a new hardware refresh for Street Fighter VI Type Arcade, but they might not. It's certainly not as big of a thing as it used to be, although I love to pop into an arcade and drop a couple hundred yen just playing some old games.
And final question, what do you want from Street Fighter VI in the future?
Well, I'm happy just to play. For me, the fun part is playing the game against other people. And the best thing for a fighting game is to have enough people online or playing it that you're able to get games when you want to play the game. So I'm quite happy if they can continue to roll out some new characters every once in a while, if there's continued interest in the game, and I'll keep playing. Like I said, I've put maybe 4 or 5 hours into World Tour mode, and I will play more. And so I would really be interested in seeing some DLC for that, or extending that sort of game out, because I think that would be a lot of fun too. I've really been enjoying that so far. But I like to keep these games installed and play with friends. And my favorite thing to do is to go out to that weekly local in Akihabara and get some wine and play some games and chat with some friends and go out to eat. So it's more of a social thing for me. I'm certainly not good enough to be anywhere near considered good at the game. So yeah, I hope they just keep on throwing out some new characters, keep the support up for the system. And it's great to see them innovate. I like that Capcom, almost every version of Street Fighter has really been different from the previous one.
That's true.
I think interesting to see, like more so than I'd say Mortal Kombat or other sorts of franchises. It's had a lot of very different ideas in there.
Well, I'm glad I got to chat with you about Street Fighter VI and Tokyo's fighting game scene. So Doc Fugu, where can people find you?
Well, I'm on Twitter, so at Doc Fugu, so no spaces, spelled like it sounds. I don't really have much to promote. I mean, I'd say support your local, go out and find some people to play some games with. It's a good way to make friends and a fun hobby and activity. So I'd say go out and try to find some games to play.
Great. And the links to everything will be in the podcast description, so check it out. Doc Fugu, once again, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for asking me to come on.
Let's take a brief ad break.
Sequelcast 2 and Friends is a podcast looking at movies in a franchise one film at a time, hosted by me, Matt Bradley Shurgi, Alex, and Thrasher. We also look at video games. We're working through Sierra Online's adventure games from Mystery House all the way up through Gabriel Knight 3 and larger pop culture topics. It's a lot of fun. For more info, go to sequelcast2.com, only on the Tokyo Beat Network.
That's all for games. Now let's get into the feature. This episode's feature is about the Pikachu Afternoon Tea event being held in Tokyo until July 3rd. So yes, if you're listening to this episode, you still have some time to check it out. It's also being held in Nagoya until late August. Should you spend hundreds of dollars to take the train to Nagoya simply to experience Pikachu Sweets? I can confidently say, maybe. I experienced Pikachu Afternoon Tea several weeks ago in the Strings Omote Sando. The Strings is a chain of fancy hotels, but the Omote Sando venue is actually a wedding hall. It does look a lot like a hotel from the outside, but on the inside, it's filled with cafes, restaurants, long hallways, and large rooms that are solely there for wedding photos. Here, you'll absolutely stumble across a couple in the midst of their photo shoot. Even if I'm really far away, I still get the feeling of, oh, I shouldn't be here, I'm going to ruin the shot. Omote Sando is a luxury shopping area within Tokyo, not too far from Harajuku. It's really not one of my haunts. I'm not often searching for new Prada bags to buy, but it is a fun neighborhood to walk around in, and has plenty of worthwhile restaurants, especially a lot of international food. This is actually my second time at the Strings Omote Sando. The first time was for a different afternoon tea set. Honestly, I don't remember what the theme was, but I do remember it was quite expensive. Now, you might be thinking, afternoon tea, what's that? You just drink tea? And if you're thinking that, you're probably American, because I also really had no concept of afternoon tea until I moved to Japan. But it is very much based on the British custom of serving tea with a big array of sweets. Think of it like a course meal, but it all comes out at the same time. And it's almost all just finger food or sweets. All the food is laid out on a multi-tier stand while the tea comes in a pot. It's like a big snack tower. Am I explaining this well, British listeners? I apologize for butchering your culture. But even though it's not from Japan, it's still very popular over here. Japan has a tremendously deep tea culture that is quite different from other countries, but there's always a curiosity about, hey, what are those other tea drinkers doing? There are constantly hotels and cafes having seasonal afternoon tea sets all over Tokyo. Pretty much any theme you can think of is represented. I've seen Hawaii-themed afternoon tea sets, strawberry, Christmas, matcha, and yes, there are indeed some pop culture collaborations, like this one I'm talking about right now, Pikachu Afternoon Tea. This really isn't an event I would check out by myself, but fortunately my wife is a huge afternoon tea fan. We've been to more than a few, and she's pretty on top of the afternoon tea scene, but when I stumbled across this, it's really the best of both worlds. She gets the afternoon tea experience, I get to look at Pikachu. A major component of afternoon tea is the presentation, so it's a very Instagrammable experience. The tea set is in Zelkova, one of the many cafes in the venue. It has this gorgeous interior with a gold aesthetic and a lot of fancy cushioned seats. It also has these gigantic birdcage-esque decorations hanging from the ceiling. It's hard to explain, but when you see it, you think, oh, I'm in a big birdcage. The first time I had afternoon tea here, I sat in the inside, but this time the Pikachu afternoon tea customers are sectioned off to the outside seating area. You can't just walk in and order it either. You need to make a reservation for the day and the time, which is pretty typical for these fancy afternoon tea sets. The outside of the venue had a huge Pikachu plushie and a bunch of balloons. From the ceiling hang big macaroon decorations with Pikachu on them, and there's some Pikachu wall decorations as well. It's not immersive as, say, a character cafe, but it does have a nice atmosphere. A mix of this austere cafe and a bunch of silly Pikachu images. When you sit down, you order the tea. The food is already decided, so you just wait for them to bring it to you. There is a little pamphlet with the menu so you can understand what's what. It's in both English and Japanese, but some of the English is a bit suspect. All of the tea is from TWG, a famous international tea brand. I got Earl Grey, which, yeah, is kind of boring, but no complaints on the taste. They had something called Midnight Hour Tea, which kind of sounds like a potion in Zelda. The food came out pretty quickly. It wasn't on a traditional afternoon tea stand, however. All the food were on these two separate mini tables. Not trays, but they looked like fancy European tables that were shrunk down. Now, the most important part, the food breakdown. There were two sections, sweet and savory. I was thankful for the savory since my wife thinks afternoon tea constitutes as lunch, which it really does not. Eating 40 pounds of sugar is not a lunch, so I'm glad some meat and quote-unquote normal food was also included. In the savory section, there are these mini hamburgers, or sliders I suppose they're called, beef, cheese, and quote, plenty of ketchup. The buns are Pikachu yellow and they came with a black pick in them, so it kind of looks like Pikachu's tail. The sliders, while small, were as good as you'd hope for. Along with these sliders were two small portions of chicken and tomato quiche, which again were quite good. And they're yellow, so that's close enough to being Pikachu related. The last savory item was the tableau salad with crispy nuts in a small glass. I don't know if the quantity constitutes it being a full salad, but again, the taste met expectations. The savory food is there for some calories and a bit of nutrition, but the main event is the sweets. You've got mini Pikachu cupcakes with yellow frosting and plastic Pikachu ears sticking out. Don't eat the ears, though. You'd think that they would have a lemony flavor, but it was really just plain sugar. There's also Thunderbolt Chocolate Opera, which is like a mini chocolate cake with berries and a chocolate heart with Pikachu on it. Piercing it is a yellow sugary Thunderbolt, which doesn't look edible, but it was. I'm a chocolate fiend, so this was probably my favorite out of everything. Following that is a forest pistachio mousse tart with a Pokeball chocolate on top. Pistachio-flavored food is incredibly popular in Japan for whatever reason. All the candy companies got together and thought, let's all try pistachio and just see what happens. But I like the texture of the tart. And speaking of great texture, this set also has caramel macaroons. Yellow with some chocolate powder on top to mimic Pikachu stripes. These were excellent, but you really have to go out of your way to make a bad macaroon. That's the finger food, but there were some items that you need a spoon to eat. The Pikachu hide-and-seek rich mango pudding was served in a tall glass and topped with whipped cream and a cherry, and of course, a little paper Pikachu. Remember this mango because it'll come back later. You also get Pikachu lollipops, which are big pieces of chocolate with Pikachu's face on them. Honestly, this tasted a bit waxy, maybe the worst thing in the set. And lastly, the fruity honey lemon jelly. It was served in a weird egg-shaped container, and it has a chocolate lightning bolt on the top. I like this, but the pudding was better. Now, that's just the base tea set. There are also some add-ons as well. I ordered a mango ice cream soda. It's this neon yellow fizzy drink with a scoop of mango ice cream on top. Are plastic Pikachu ears sticking out of the ice cream? Of course. Inside the drink is a light that makes the drink brighter. Is it okay to drink something with a light in it? It's kind of housed in a plastic cube, but there's a battery in there, right? It's just a little dangerously close to drinking a battery. The drink is really fizzy. It'll crackle in your mouth, so it has a kind of a fun texture to it. There's also what I can only describe as a super dessert, something you have to order in advance, and they only make a few per day. I didn't order this because it was an additional 2,000 yen, but I did see another table have one. It's hard to explain, so stay with me here. The main food is this big chocolate orb, and then it comes with some mango sauce you pour onto it. The plate kind of looks like a Pollock painting with chocolate and mango sauce splashed on it, and Pika Pika written on the plate with chocolate powder. It looks very artistic. Taste? Unknown. How much did the experience cost? Well, the tea set is 5,800 yen, and the drink I ordered was about 1,000 yen, so all in all, maybe around $60. That's for two people, though, but I can't say that you're going to be full after eating this. But don't think of it as a lunch. Think of it as a very fancy snack. You technically get infinite tea since you don't pay for refills, so drink up. Pikachu afternoon tea is a very unique experience that is pretty unorthodox. Yeah, we see a lot of food collabs, but this is a bit more high-end and creative. It's really like food art in a way. And when it comes to afternoon tea, looking is just as important as eating. I saw other tables with Pokemon plushies and they were arranging them to get these fun shots. The afternoon tea experience is something you enjoy, but the real fun is editing and posting your pictures to social media. Would I recommend Pikachu afternoon tea? If you like Pikachu and afternoon tea, I think this is a pretty easy recommendation. If you've never had afternoon tea before, this might not be the best entry point since the sheer volume of food you get at the other afternoon tea sets I've had in the past kind of dwarf the Pikachu offerings. But if you're a hardcore Pokemon fan in Tokyo and want to do something a bit different, there's definitely a lot to like. Again, it runs until July 3rd in Tokyo, so you've still got some time. That's it for the feature. Now let's look at the news. Oh my, there was seemingly an infinite amount of news. Summer Games Fest, Xbox Showcase, Starfield Direct, Wholesome Games, Day of the Devs, and that's not even everything. I'm not going to run down every single game here, sorry. People have already done that, but instead I wanted to highlight the five most interesting new game announcements, at least for me. Let's go in alphabetical order. A, B, C, D, Dungeons of Hinterberg from Microbird Games, an indie developer from Vienna. It kind of looks like a Zelda. It's a third-person 3D action-adventure game where you explore dungeons around a scenic alpine village. In the trailer, we see some sword fighting, some unique abilities that look like they could be Zelda items, and it's got this great cel-shaded kind of watercolor look to it and it looks really just fantastic in motion. It's labeled as an RPG, so there might be some leveling up or some number crunching behind the scenes, but it does look like a very Zelda-inspired experience. Despite Zelda's success, there really aren't a whole lot of Zelda clones out there, especially 3D ones. I always assumed the reason was that, well, making a Zelda game is quite hard. You need to figure out dozens of interesting puzzles along with an epic overworld to explore filled with memorable characters and bosses. Easier said than done, right? But I'm glad somebody is trying it. It's coming out next year on Xbox and Steam, and probably some other stuff later. Another indie game, Kibu, from Studio Inky Fox. They're known for Omno, a game I admittedly have never heard of, but it got good reviews and it is on Switch. Kibu stars a red panda in a Japanese-inspired land where you fish, farm, walk around through grassy fields, and get in sword fights. Say no more. I'm absolutely a sucker for any game set in Japan or using a Japanese aesthetic. Zero release date on this, but I'll keep my eye on it. Okay, we've talked about two indies, now let's dip our toes into the multinational corporation waters. Atlus revealed Metaphor ReFantazio, a new JRPG from the Persona team. You've got Hashino as the director, Soejima as the artist, Meguro as the composer. Is this secretly Persona 6? Maybe. This was teased eons ago as Project ReFantasy, and it's finally coming out next year on Xbox and probably PlayStation. I wish I could describe the trailer, but it moved so quickly. There were so many words and images, it felt like being shot in the face with fireworks. Despite this, I am intrigued. It looks like it takes place in a steampunk-inspired Europe, and seems to be a turn-based RPG that you'd expect from the Persona team. It's dripping in style and overly designed UI menus. I just love that this team is getting a shot at making a completely new IP with a fairly big budget. New IPs from big studios are getting rarer and rarer, so we've got to appreciate when one comes along. Now I'm going to immediately pivot into something incredibly hypocritical, a spinoff of a major franchise. Yes, Persona 5 Tactica, also from Atlus. It's a tactics game starring the Persona 5 cast. There are turns, grids, chibi characters. How can I ignore this? The art is reminiscent of Persona Q, which is something I didn't really expect to come back in any form. And unlike the other three games I mentioned, it is actually coming out this year. And on Switch. So if Nintendo doesn't announce anything for later this year, you've got something on your plate. And finally, one of the more pleasant surprises, Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown from Ubisoft Montpellier, who worked on the recent Rayman games and Valiant Hearts. It's a 2D action platformer with a great graphical style that is very similar to Metroid Dread. The main character is incredibly agile, has a lot of cool combat options, and it looks like it has a healthy mix of Twitch platforming and puzzles. It really makes sense for the franchise to go in this direction. Assassin's Creed kind of ate its lunch when it comes to the historical action-adventure genre. They're going back to the franchise's 2D origins, but also incorporating a lot of modern ideas to make it distinct from Assassin's Creed. It comes out in January of next year, and yes, it is on the Switch. Really, this game looks quite stellar, and I can see it being a sleeper hit, or at the very least a critical darling. Those are the five I'm most looking forward to. I thought all the presentations were quite good in terms of new announcements, and focusing on titles that are actually coming out in 2023. Nintendo, they released Zelda and then dipped. I don't blame them. I mean, I've been playing Zelda, and if Nintendo said, hey, after Pikmin there are no new games this year, I'd be totally fine. I have a massive backlog, and we know DLC is coming, and there's a ton of cool new games coming out this holiday. And I'll probably still be playing Zelda, possibly until the end of time. Okay, let's wrap it up. Thanks as always for listening. Be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on your favorite app. Leave a 5-star review as well. It helps with visibility. The podcast is also available on YouTube, so like and subscribe there as well. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. Just search for Tokyo Game Life or find the links in the podcast description. If you like the podcast, be sure to share with your friends and on social media. If there's anything you want me to talk about or cover, don't be shy. Just message me on Twitter. The next episode will be on July 2nd. See you next time. Matane!